myself. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Okay, so we finally have it, lads. The roadmap, the return to play roadmap, which was leaked a little bit last week, and the leaks weren't entirely accurate, if we're being honest, because clubs get 11 weeks. We were thinking that, based off the articles we're reading, that there was going to be 2 months for club and 2 months for intercounty. Of course, lots of people had issues with this. As it turns out, the clubs are getting 11 weeks from July the 31st until September the 14th. So how anyone can complain about that, I'll never know. Intercounty is getting a raw deal. There's no point in saying anything else. They're getting 1 month's preparation, no access to players until the 14th of September. And then their championship starts in the muck and the dirt on October the 17th and could run across Christmas. So they'll be getting a flavour of what club players have to deal with for I don't know how many years, Conan. Like, I mean, it is weighted more heavily towards looking after the club player.
It is, but it's also weighted towards maybe getting a crowd into the county games as well, which I'm all for.
And that's understandable too, you know.
I don't think there's any point in having an inter-county game. Like, it just benefits everyone if there's a crowd going to the game. It benefits the clubs, so you get some money from it, and it benefits all of us who can get to go to the games when we're allowed to go to them. So I was very surprised to see, like you said, you can't believe that anybody would have a complaint about the clubs having 11 weeks and going first, but like they still do. It's unbelievable. Like, this is when you want to play, isn't it? Like, we've got the summer, there's 11 weeks. Everybody can go now and enjoy the best weather. And as you say, the county teams are stranded down at the back end of the year.
Conan, 11 weeks uninterrupted in the best conditions of the summer. I'm getting a little bit annoyed with the CPA now. I know they deleted a tweet, but they're almost turning in, Conor, to like a government opposition party where they have to find fault with everything. Like, I mean, when I got this news last Friday, I was absolutely in great form. I was like, this is just fantastic. And all the complaining and the mistakes I think the GA made, I'm parking them a little bit. Well, we might talk about them later on the show. The newspaper review might bring us in that direction. But I want to focus on, this is very, very positive. We could have 42,000 people potentially in Croke Park at the end of the year if the social distancing reduces to 1 metre. We can have a club championship uninterrupted, have an inter-county championship. And if it goes into January next year, what's the big deal? It could be in All-Ireland at the end of January. This is fantastic news. How people can turn this into a negative after the 3 or 4 months we're after enduring, I can't understand that mentality.
Yeah, I can't really understand it either, Willie, to be honest. Like as yourself and Conan said, it's win-win. I think the club player can't really complain because he's being prioritised for a start. It's club first and then inter-county afterwards. And just as an inter-county fan, like I think the kind of dissatisfaction has sprung from this idea that came out of the woodwork early enough, and a lot of people have stuck to it since, is in like abandon the inter-county championship and just leave the year to club. And I don't know why people are thinking that way, but that seems to be the root cause of some of this negative reaction, that like, oh, you're shoehorning an inter-county championship in there. But like, that's ignoring the fact that like you're being given 11 weeks after everything that's been going on. 11 weeks is time to have, obviously it's not ideal, but it's time to have a meaningful club championship. And why would you give out at the end of the day about a return to the county championship? Everybody should be delighted about that. And the fact that like anybody who thought that like you can just write off the inter-county championship, it's just unrealistic for any number of reasons. So, and that like that kind of annoyed me too, because when you hear the good news on Friday, you're like, right, this is brilliant. And then so you can't help but kind of keep track of some of the negative reaction. It takes away from some of your positivity a little bit. And that was the only negative to come out of the news that we got last Friday.
Yeah, like the idea that we wouldn't play an inter-county championship, that's the big show in town. Where people lose sight of this, and that, you know, the whole idea with the CPA and the, you know, the issues club players face, which are all fair enough, and we argue them on the show. But let's be honest, if I had a choice between watching a club championship for the year and an inter-county championship, I'd pick the inter-county championship all day long. I'm sorry, but it's much better. So I don't know why the complaints are. And financially, the GAA need it. And like, why they could complain about giving the club 11 weeks anyways, I'm repeating myself. But even on top of this, there's a little bit more positivity, because we thought last week that they were going to play the club championships with a knockout. And John Horne has said, no, county boards can decide themselves. They have 11 weeks. It's enough time to play round robins. They can play round robins if they want, quarterfinals, semifinals. So you're looking at the big jewel counties still being a little bit tight for time, but they could easily play 3 weeks round robin, quarterfinal, semifinal, final in 6 weeks. So you could play 6 weeks hurling, 5 weeks football, or, you know, alternate them depending on how many teams you have. It will be tight for big jewel counties, you know, like Cork, Galway, Tipperary, things like that. But it's definitely doable. So not only do they get 11 weeks, they don't have to have it as a knockout, Colin. So Skerries won't be out in the first round.
Actually, it's funny you say that. We actually had this conversation yesterday. Just I was going over to the shop and I was like, Jesus, imagine we got Ballymun in the first round and it was straight knockout and you'd be doing all these 5Ks for no reason at all. But like, do you know what you're saying there as well about the club and all the issues that they have, and like a lot of valid issues, but they almost lose their integrity when we start saying get rid of the county championship. It's like, do you actually want the club to be better, or are you just like, are you on this crusade now just to get rid of county football? Like, what planet's that? Like, do we not love the GAA, and is that not the best showcase and the best window for it? But yeah. Like, yes, the answer, like, you know, to go back to your club and the round robin stuff, the fact that it's 11 weeks is a lifesaver, especially with no league. So having those three group games will give people time to sort of vent into it. And I'd say if counties don't have those round robins, then they should probably start looking at getting them in.
Well, and that's the thing. And another thing that needs to be pointed out is that when the intercounty starts on September the 14th. Before that, access to intercounty players is banned. Now, you know, you'll say, let's see what happens when a club player is out in the middle of August, you know, but that's issues that will arise then. But clubs are going to be allowed to continue on with league games in October. It's a great deal for a club player. It's a fantastic deal for club players around the country, and there is no getting away from that. They should be absolutely delighted. We'll run through the dates here, lads. So most people will know this, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. June 29th, pitches are open. Everybody knows my opinion on that. That should be happening today. But look, we're not going to start getting dragged into that again. All clubhouse buildings will be closed, except for toilets. As we mentioned, training's non-contact. And you can have, this is an interesting one, you small groups, 10 players and 2 coaches in a dedicated area of the field. So that reads to me like you can have your whole squad on the field, 10 in one third, 10 in the other, and 10 in the other, and everyone can train on the field at the same time. So there's not an issue with that, because, like, I mean, as of today, the government are saying that it's okay for 15 people and trainers and coaches to play non-contact. You know, so if you wanted to be very negative about that, you'd say, well, the GAA now are 3 weeks behind the government, which, again, I'm very critical of. I wish they had just gone with the government thing and we're all back doing that today. But at least when they come back, it's not 10 players on the entire pitch, Conan. It's 10 players in a dedicated area of the field.
Yeah, it's like I said to you, it's hard in a place like Skerries where we share the field with 2 or 3 teams at once. So that will be a little tougher. But
really, you shared it not in the same training session, surely.
Oh yeah, but sure, you only have one pitch. Like, you have hurling, you have camogie, ladies football, and football. You have 3 adult senior teams. You have 2 minor teams. You know, there's so many teams trying to get access to the pitch. Like, so you would share the pitch and. So that'll be tough, but it's just going to have to be a case of getting more creative, like, and not just doing runs and doing hand passing. And, you know, the old favourite, like, when a coach knows that the training's good, is when people are hammering into each other and they're beating the shit out of each other. Like, you can't do that. Like, so you're going to have to figure out a different way to get intensity up. It'll be good. I think it'll bring coaching on another level.
Yeah, so I think they will have to be creative. There's no doubt. And we're going to talk to Barry Solon in a little while to maybe give us an idea of how creative they're going to have to get and what's going to suit players and stuff like that. So players are going to arrive and depart togged out. That's pretty much what I do anyways. So that's not going to be any hassle for me. I land togged out, walk out into the field, and then get in my car and go home. Antisocial. I'm the owl lad. You know, the owl lad that doesn't want to be listening to young lads. The health questionnaire has to be completed. And players are responsible for taking their own temperature. So seen the questionnaire, it's obviously in the document, and just a few questions, you have to take no to all of them. If it's yes to any, you don't go training, especially if your temperature is high. And clubs need to have thermometers there available so that if some lad, listen, some bird brain lands, oh, well, I lost my thermometer, you know, they have to have access to be able to do it there and then. So nobody's going to be training if they have a temperature that's above 37.5. COVID supervisor has to be available for each team. So multiple COVID supervisor. We're kind of thinking a couple of weeks ago, it would only need to be one. Only players and management are allowed into the ground, and no sharing equipment like water bottles or stuff like that. That's practical stuff that we were predicting on the show already. Then from July the 20th, it's a return to full contact training. So now, like, I mean, it's only 11 days full contact, which probably will be an issue, Conan, injury wise. Again, if training in the 3 weeks probably leading up to the full contact isn't done at a decent level.
Yeah, and especially considering we're all middle distance runners at the minute, and now you're going to have to start preparing for a championship. It's not like you're bleeding into some friendlies and whatever else. You went straight into the highest level possible. So that will be tough. It's funny though. I got a message from somebody, a DM on Twitter, to say that their coach is already organizing a team training session down at the beach, but they're not calling it a training session. They're calling it physical activity outdoors for a group of people. You know, so that will start happening now over the next 3 weeks before you're allowed back on the pitches. So you probably will have an easing in phase there illegally. Yeah. But
they're allowed to do that anyways, right? Sure, that's government. That's not pitches.
There'll be no insurance though, like, you know, so, and there'll be no physio, you know, stuff like that. If they get injured, then they're not covered or whatever. But like that will happen. They're allowed to exercise outside, yeah. And you know, there's not allowed to be under the GA, then.
Another thing is whether the 11 days will actually be honoured, you know, or would a club decide, look, 11 days isn't enough, let's get back to full contact a week earlier. Now, they would be going against government policy and advice on that, you know, July the 20th on that too. Another thing is the kind of schedule, like same the McGrath brothers from Tipperary, who be two strong dual club. Like out of that 11 weeks club window, they could be playing 7, 8, 9 weekends of that every weekend. And that's on the back of, you know, not doing anything major for 4 months, you know, or being a long distance runner and then heading straight into an intercounty, you know, season, Connor. That's pretty tough. But look, again, I'm not criticising any of this. I think it's the only way they could have done it. There are definitely going to be challenges based on the small amount of time we have left in the year.
I think so. You're just going to have to compromise. You mentioned the McGrath brothers. I was immediately thinking of the Collinses in Clare. Podge and Sean, the Cratlow, and they'd be like, Cratlow would be a good football club and obviously a good hurling club as well. So, but listen, that all comes back to the fact that like there's going to have to be some compromises here. Players know that it's not ideal, but they know they'd rather this way, I suppose, than anything else that would deprive them of the opportunity to play in either championship. And I think this is when like strength and conditioning coaches, you're going to be talking to Barry Solner, are going to come into their own. I mean, like Conan talks about getting the message there. We got a message, I think. We immediately, our group got a message about kind of some sort of guidelines about our own training and how we taper it towards before we start back collective training. And I was glad to hear our S&C guys say that 5Ks are no good to us anymore. So I'm immediately stopping them. So,
That's very important. Yeah, they're useless. That's kind of November training. You're moving into the new year now. Like that's the 5K should end now. We said that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we're a little behind the curve so here in Mayo, Willie, but I was just glad to hear that I don't have to do them anymore anyway.
Yeah. So in July the 20th in the roadmap, build it, the clubhouse and everything stay closed. You still need the health questionnaire. All those things stay in place. And then they're going to give more information closer to the time about whether spectators can go into the club games. So I think that's going to be decided closer to the time. So, like, I mean, and then August the 10th is the last one. So you work away with the club games. Still, everything's closed. No, the facilities are actually open then, the clubhouse and all that kind of thing. And then the county training starts from 14th of September, which we mentioned. Intercounty is to start back on the 17th of October, which we mentioned. And then the CCCC is going to give a full fixture schedule once they have it done. So, like, I mean, that's kind of, that's the roadmap. For me, very, very, in summation of the club, very, very, very positive. There's no doubt about that. And it, I think they did the best job that they could do. And I would agree with, look, I agree with all these different phases, only I would have them all moved up 3 weeks. Do you know what I mean? I think that's everything in them. It's all sensible stuff, Con, and it all makes sense. It's all stuff you would agree with. It's just a pity that they diverged 3 weeks away from the government guidelines, which seem a lot more reasonable those dates.
Yeah, look, it's hard. Like, I was actually coming in knowing that you'd be saying that as well. I was thinking, is there a counter argument to that? And there's not really. Like, yeah, it probably should just be moved 3 weeks further forward. But the fact that I can see that end in sight now, I can see the light, and it's only 3 weeks, I'm sort of like, ah, well, you know, it's grand. Like, you know, I'm sort of not that bothered. It doesn't make much sense, but I'm not bothered by it, really.
Yeah, well, I'm not as bothered as I was this time last week. There's no doubt about that. I was ready to kill them this time last week, but we have something now which is important. The inter-county, of course, then, everybody says, oh, everything's weighted towards them. This has absolutely not been weighted towards them. So county managers have no access to players until September 14th as a ban on collective county training. Fair enough. They're talking about problems, you know, between intercounty managers being denied access to players, and McGill. What's his first name?
Fergal, is it?
Fergal McGill said, I think it's practical. I don't expect managers to be happy, far from it. But there's a very different thing to whether it's practical or not. There's a cake here and has to be divided among a massive amount of participants. The overwhelming body of participants are club players. So I think on any terms, if you're given a full month to prepare a team, that's plenty. And I agree with Fergal here. Like, I mean, these players are coming in after a club championship 2 months. Like, they only have 1 month to prepare them. I think it's more than enough. I do think that certain players like the McGrath brothers will have to be given a full week off, you know, to start. And the difference is as well, inter-county managers are coming straight in that month with full contact with players that have had a lot of ball work. For me, you spend a month, they should be in good shape, maybe a little bit of intense training, but a lot of tactical stuff in that month, I'd imagine, Connor.
Yeah, and I think, like, I made this point a couple of times over the last few weeks, but it comes back to the fact that everybody is or is supposed to be on a level playing field as well. So while, you know, a manager might say that a month might not be enough, like, as you said, I think it probably is enough, but, like, at least every county has that month. No other county will have an extra month or an extra 6 weeks compared to another county. So everybody's on a level playing field. I suppose the difficulty where it comes in is, as you mentioned, the McGrath brothers there who might have been exposed to loads of championship action, you know, in their own county, whereas other counties who might not be knocked out earlier might be in a county where there's, you know, not a strong dual championship, for example, might have more time. But again, this comes back to this, you know, the GAA have made the best of what they've had in front of them, you know, and I think that the roadmap they have presented, you know, for a club and for a county is reasonable at this stage as well.
Yeah. Another thing is gyms. So gyms in the government roadmap are opening up on August the 10th. They're in the last phase. And there might be a temptation, Conan, for players to go, here, Jesus, I haven't done weights in a long time. Don't do them. You can't start them now. You're in the middle of club championship. And inter-county managers, you would worry about setting, you know, a gym program throughout the club championship, because they do it during the National League at intercounty level. You would be worried about managers giving the intercounty players some sort of a gym routine to build them up a month in advance, you know, and have them doing weights, which they hadn't been doing for 4 months. Now, some of them would have access to weights, but that's just another dynamic that's, you know, going to have to be ironed out or going to have to decide, like, if I was in that boat, I wouldn't start doing anything I hadn't been doing. For if I was doing, like, body weight, you know, strength and conditioning, press ups, squats, all that kind of stuff with small enough weights, I'm not sure changing that on August the 10th would make much sense.
I'll join your canvas and Willie to keep the gyms closed. I'll definitely back that horse.
Well, I think this is probably more of a question to ask Barry, who's coming up in a minute, than ask a numbskull like you about strength and conditioning advice.
But remember, we had Barry Cahill on before, and he was talking about, like, you know, at the stage you're just maintaining, like, you know. So I don't really
you're maintaining if you do the heavy lifting. They haven't had the chance to do the heavy lifting. Yeah,
exactly. So I don't know, like, you know, suddenly the gyms have all been closed for so long. Like, you know, what are you going to get done 4 weeks before championship? Yeah, like, you probably do yourself more harm than good. Do you know what? I was actually thinking about this the other day. It's probably coming up with an excuse for not being as big as I should be. But it's like, I spent so much energy and time trying to get stronger and lift bigger weights, but I never run into a tackle anyway because like I'm told not to, and you know, and it's not the smart thing to do. And it's like, would you not be better just accentuating something that you're good at rather than always focusing on your weakness? And I think especially now when you got an 11-week window, that's the thing everybody should be doing. Just focus on what you're good at and try to make that better.
Yeah, but I don't. Doing strength and conditioning isn't just being able to hit a fella. It's being able to keep going longer. It's been able to stand a fella up and be able to tackle him. And you know, it's about having, you know, strength and conditioning. It's not necessarily about being able to knock somebody over. It's about being a lot stronger to be able to do things better. So what a couple of other little things here before we get to Barry. So they're hoping, I mentioned at the start, that if the social distancing is 2 meters to be able to get 21,000 into Croke Park, and if it's 1 meter then get double that, obviously 42,000. 42,000 is a good crowd in Croke Park for the All-Ireland final. They're going to put bucket seats in Hill 16 and social distance them. Another thing is they haven't made a decision on whether to finish this year's leagues. They're thinking maybe they could finish the games that affect relegation and promotion, which they could do that. When they do that, I don't know, because it's going to be pretty intense. You'd imagine they're going to need October, November and most of January to finish the All-Ireland. And then to just start back into next year's National League. So it's definitely going to be a challenge for them in how they're going to be able to, you know, get all this working well. There's no doubt they have next January completely free with no club and stuff. Maybe there'll be some Sigerson and Fitzgibbon issues. But they have the dates now, I suppose. It's a matter for the CCC, Connor, to be able to come up with how they're going to fit everything in there. But there's no doubt it's going to go over Christmas and go into next year. Impossible otherwise.
Yeah, and that comes back to as well, if like club players are given out that it's unfair on the inter-county player. Look at the inter-county player then that might, he'll have to play his club championship, then he has to play an inter-county championship, and then you're looking at potentially finishing the league in maybe January or February or next year before going into...
Into a league again, yeah.
It's going to start.
You really think about next season's league, so you know, rather than having the exact same thing and having the 8 games, yeah. I think you should really condense that to help.
You imagine something like that, or like they might even have to look at having a condensed championship again next year because
together. Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. They'll play next year's league. They'll go April for clubs, or they might go May for clubs next year. You know, they might give the league maybe April or March and April rather than February and March, you know, March and April next year, then May for clubs, and then a condensed championship again. I think they're going to have to do that.
Well, it can't be just 2020 that's compromised because of this, because you can't just say that, like, right, it'll affect the 2020 season, because it's going to stretch into January and February. So obviously it's going to have a counter effect on next season. And the GA might hope that by the end of the 2021 season, that by 2022, they're able to start again afresh. But it's definitely next season is going to have an impact. I think, as Colin said, a condensed league, and you're probably going to have to look at a condensed championship. Like you only briefly mentioned Sigerson there. I'm thinking of underage, inter-county championship, all this sort of stuff, and to try and fit club in as well. So the 2021 season is going to be impacted as well. And just before what you mentioned there as well about the fans, I'd say that like by the middle of October, Colin made a good point earlier on that like the good thing about, you know, the inter-county championship is that you can realistically think that there might be decent crowds at these matches, and the middle of October is 4 months away. And I just imagine, like, I'm looking at what's happened between phase one and phase two. You know, there's been an entire phase removed. A lot of restrictions have been lifted. Now, I can't say for certain, obviously, but I would say there'd be a lot of pressure on the social distancing distance to come down to a meter by that stage. So you could be looking at 40,000 people in Croke Park by October, November, which would be great.
And another thing just quickly is that we haven't factored in is like we're going across flu season in the winter, which is going to throw a huge spanner in the works with people getting a flu and having high temperatures, you know, and then having the whole issue, is it a flu? Is it, you know, the coronavirus? And then is that team safe to play? And there's all sorts of kind of mess. It could get messy, you know, over the winter and during flu season. But anyways, we'll deal with that when it comes. So we know, like we said, that the intercounty preparation time is 1 month and the club is 11 days full contact and another 3 weeks before that. So to give us an idea of how challenging this is going to be for club managers and county managers and strength and conditioning coaches, Barry Solan joins us on the line now. Barry, how's it going?
Good, Colm, yeah. Good to see some dates in the diary there.
Well, it is. Listen, we're all very optimistic. It's been a great shot in the arm. But here we go, right? So lads have been sitting around for 11... or for about, 4 months And by the time June the 29th is going to come, now they've been doing their own training. June 29th, then they'll have 3 weeks of non-contact training and then only 11 days contact training in the lead up to a championship game. Like, it's far from ideal. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, possibly. I think, I don't know, with the, like, the fitness trends over the last couple of months, I'm sure a high majority of people have kept themselves in some sort of decent shape. I don't think you've got the, like, you know, if you were a normal club player coming back training in January or January or February, I don't think you have the kind of Christmas and winter months under you. So
yeah,
you might never, you know, you might be a couple of steps up on the ladder already. So you'd be hoping then that would take into account. But still, the date that you mentioned there, like, that's 8 weeks really from now. So it does give people a chance to know that. I'm sure players and coaches now are delighted just to have, like, something to aim for and something to aim at. So that will give people a bit of focus on that. And still, like, if people aren't in great shape presently, like, you still have a bit of time there now to get yourself moving before you getting into Anton, you know.
What do you make of the 11 days? This is for club. We'll start off with the club anyway. So it's the July the 20th, they're allowed full contact, so they can finally start playing mini matches or, you know, matches in training. And that's only 11 days out. And, you know, tapering towards a championship match, you might not do much in the week leading up to it. So they're going to have very little football in them.
Yeah, that's true. And it probably goes back to it being, you know, similar, like, through different restrictions, but going back to it being similar to an early season game where you maybe have a good bit of fitness work done, because that would be the focus at that time of year.
Yeah.
And then you're just getting your hands on the ball or whatever. And obviously the games generally at that time of the year aren't as important. But now the fact that it's going straight into a club championship game, yeah, it leaves it a bit tight on people, but I guess it's just different circumstances, and players can still, you know, work away with a ball, or I believe there's a, you know, some smaller groups allowed to possibly train together before it is even contact training, and, you know, how people use that and take advantage of that so they can get the ball in their hands, and people being used to being around bodies, even though they're socially distanced, that will kind of get people back up to, you know, being in a somewhat, I guess, of a match kind of scenario before they get back into contact training.
Yeah, that's it. So they'll have 3 weeks in the lead up to the before the contact, at least to get their hands on the ball in smaller groups and swing over a few pints. But there'll be nobody scrubbing out of them. That's it. I suppose that's the difference. That's the difference.
Yeah, there might be a few fellas delighted with that and a few disappointed with it. So yeah.
Come here.
Yeah, it is. It just leaves it tight there. Yeah.
Yeah, at least, like, Kamir, what about, you know, from a strength and conditioning point of view? So a lot of players wouldn't have access to weights. They will have been using kind of body weight exercises, press-ups, sit-ups, squats, all those things. Like, the gyms open back on August 10th. Like, the advice from a strength and conditioning point of view wouldn't be to start, you know, lifting weights if you haven't been, you know, because they will be in the middle of championship at that stage.
Yeah, I think really where, like, it's going to be a little bit different for people in terms of what your starting point is. And that's, like, how you turn up. If you're someone who's had access to weights, whatever, at home or, you know, through whatever a club has, or you might have borrowed and you've been doing that, you know, absolutely fine, continue on with it. But if it's a case that you're getting into, you know, I wouldn't be adding anything new to somebody's preparation or somebody's training program on the week leading into a game or the couple of weeks leading into it. I keep it pretty simple. Do what you can on the pitch. You know, players can still get a lot of speed work done on the pitch and do a lot of body weight power exercise and things like that. That would also have a carryover. And I think the main thing now, probably from what you've seen over the last couple of months, is there's been a big, I guess, increase in the amount of people, like, going steady state running in terms of doing 5Ks or 10Ks. But, like, if you were to play a club game or an inter-county game at the pace you do a 5K, all you'd have is people passing you out all day long. So that would be, you know, people need to be careful with the emphasis on that, because the game, really, while, you know, people might cover 7 or 8K in a club game, a lot of that is done jogging, walking, but the 5 or 10% of it that's done at high speed is really what makes the difference, and your preparation and training then would need to reflect that. So you have a portion of training where people get to really open their legs out and cover ground at a good speed, you know.
It was just a McNulty used to call those kind of running things money in the bank. But, like, I mean, they're useless, really, when it comes to a match situation. You know, because all I see, Barry, is people doing, like, 5K, 10K runs. Like, I mean, you know, for match preparation, that's not, you know, like you say, it's all sprinting, stopping, going again, higher intensity training.
Yeah, and like you're really looking at the difference in a game is like that, the, you know, a small percentage of the match is made up of very high intensity actions. But even though they're a small percentage, they're the things that are the deciding factors. And that's whether someone can get to win a ball or make space to take a shot or close down an opponent or whatever it might be. So training then, in the main sense, you're trying to get training to really reflect the demands of the game. And if you were to take a 5K as an example, like you mentioned, Woolly, like someone running a 5K at a good pace might be running it at 4 or 5 metres a second in terms of distance to be covering, but someone sprinting in the game would be doing it at 8 or 9. Yeah. So it's very hard for the car to go from like second gear to fifth gear. There needs to be a bit of work done in third and fourth gear there to get people there safely. So that would be a big thing in terms of how players turn up to come back to training, and that there is a bit of that kind of high-speed running and sprinting planned in, just in a common-sense approach, but that you do expose players to it before they get back playing games. And, you know, training drills can do that too with the ball if they're designed well enough. It doesn't necessarily have to be just running and not using the ball, because I'm sure when players come back now and coaches, they're going to want to make every minute they can with the ball count. So it's just designing sessions and games where people have the opportunity to do that. So an example of that might be if you play 5v5 in a 20-metre box, there's going to be a lot of change in direction, speeding up, slowing down, contact, all those kind of things. And that's kind of more intense for a way to describe it. Whereas if you play 5v5 in like a 60-metre box, there's going to be a bit more ground covered and there's going to be a bit more distance involved. So it's just getting the blend of those two things right, so you can use the ball and the rules and the game plan you have and just condition the games to make sure that like you're making the best effect of the kind of limited training sessions you're going to have with the team or the group, you know?
Yeah, I'd say you can still socially distance but kind of mimic a match kind of situation in that first 3 weeks, you know?
Exactly, without
contact, yeah.
Yeah, and the one thing players don't get then probably in those settings is if you've been out doing a bit of fitness work yourself or whatever it is, you're kind of not used now of reacting to something. So even getting into a small group, you're, you know, well, if I know this guy plays off one side of his body or he tends to do this or, you know, losing a defender or closing down an attacker or whatever it might be, you're reacting to like a stimulus that you need to, you know, get used to doing again and get back into a game scenario as close as you can mimic it, you know.
Right. So here, the Intercounty have 1 month. So they're going to be back on September 14th with the championship starting on October 17th. You've worked at plenty of Intercounty teams, Barry. Intercounty managers will not like this 4 weeks. They want 3 months of a run in. They certainly don't want their players coming off a tough club championship where they don't have their hands on them. And, you know, the Intercounty training is banned pretty much until September 14th. So, like, I mean, for me, a month is more than enough, especially coming off most of them will have been playing football. But intercounty managers tend to be a little bit more controlling. I mean that it, not in a terrible way, that, you know, than that. So, like, I mean, the strength and conditioning coaches for intercounty managers will be, you know, planning out that month, and they'll be probably worried a lot about getting players injured coming off the club championship.
Yeah, I think actually when I looked at it there off the news that came out there yesterday, I think it's actually, if you're an intercounty player, it's quite a nice build up, because you've got a good bit of advance warning. Like, you're looking at it now, I think it's maybe 15 or 16 weeks until kind of that comes around. Like, so I guess that's no different to, you know, somebody coming back in November and maybe a national league, you know, starting in early February. But from that point of view, you wouldn't have the exposure to playing club games, which I think is a really good thing, because you know, the guys have already had the guts of half the season completed. I'm sure any of the lads at playing at intercounty level are generally very, very good for keeping themselves fit. So I think they're going to have a great run of it, in terms of they've had a couple of months maybe to clear up knocks and bumps that if you had Anthony you got to work on and get rid of that. You've now got a nice kind of ramp up into the intercounty season, which is like the real high end of it. But you're going to get to play club games and, you know, get exposed to match minutes there. And then I'm sure when they come back into the county teams then for that month, that you're, you know, training obviously will go up a notch. But again, they'll be looking to play as much football, I'm sure, as they can, because people will be, you know, I won't say inter-county match fit, but probably not far off it when they've came through a bit of a couple of club games and have a good bit of training under their belt, you know.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, I mean, when you listen to some managers and they talk about their, they almost have like a 5-month training program where they're you know, gearing up to peak at a certain month, say if it's in May or June, and they might train hard right throughout the National League. This is ripping up this script completely then, isn't it? Because like they won't be allowed to have them while the club season's going on, and they'll only be given a month.
Yeah, it might be something in terms of a little bit of a window into the future in terms of like how the approach is and the way the seasons work. I find it like if I was an inter-county player, like probably you're thinking, you know, when you come back for pre-season, you're thinking probably, Jesus, months until there's going to be a game here, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not the case this time now, you know? And generally because of the time of year it is and the bank of work people will have done already, are going to arrive to start in much better shape than people normally would turn up after a couple of weeks off and maybe having a good time over the winter months or over Christmas, you know. So there is probably a bit of learning on it, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out now in terms of, but again, the teams who make the best use of this time will have a bit of an advantage then going into the competition.
Yeah, I suppose the question is there a need for those big, long, drawn-out kind of programmes over months? You know, like, I mean, I know that maybe it's just the way the season is kind of planned out. Like, you could get a player properly up to fitness in 4 or 5 weeks, right?
Yeah, and again, that comes back to the kind of earlier point we were mentioning there, in that it just depends where your starting point is. If you're like a young lad coming into an inter-county panel that's played with maybe the minor or under-20s or 21s, you know, you're going to need a bit more time in terms of long-term development over a number of seasons. Whereas if you're someone who's, you know, played for a number of seasons and you keep yourself in good shape, a couple of weeks of training is generally, it's getting you ready to play a match.
Yeah.
But the thing is then is just getting enough match exposure before you go into the competition of like a National League. So that would be where your like Auburn Cup or FPD and those kind of things kick in, you know. And I guess it's just the organisation of the season, the way it works. If you look at other sports, they have, you know, shorter off seasons probably and a more longer organized season. I guess the difference in this instance with kind of the club and the inter-county thing, for you would never have had a club build into an inter-county season before. So
yeah,
it may be something that people can get a bit of match exposure from and take a bit of learning from that, you know.
Right. Okay, so I suppose the big takeaway, like the inter-county will be that bit easier because they can go straight into contact and they have a month. The club is a little bit more complicated in that they have the 3 weeks first with no contact and then 11 days contact. So your advice within those 3 weeks is to mimic, you know, match situations as much as possible within the, you know, no contact restrictions.
Yeah, and I'd be, obviously, if players have done a good bit of work while they've been away and they still have a bit of time to catch up on some of that now before they come back, for that time when you're on the pitch, and we've done the same here, like our initial start here, you were limited to 5 players on the pitch, I think was the initial rules,
right?
And you just have to come up with what's going to work and how people are going to coach or whatever. But if you've got, you know, a big space like a Gaelic football pitch, it's quite easy to design sessions where people get contact with the ball, get to make some decisions, get plenty of running in them, get the fitness levels up. You can include, you know, bigger sessions where they cover more distance or more smaller sessions where there might be a focus on change of direction. Like, I would go just with a steady increase, and a kind of simple rule you would use in the conditioning kind of element of things is keep it within like 10 to 20%. You know, you're not going to turn up one day and do X amount and then turn up and do 50% more the next day. So just that you build players up slowly over that, and that you build that to match where they're at and stick to what works for your setting rather than, you know, copying what you hear another team is doing or whatever might be happening in different counties or with different clubs.
Yeah, but the one thing that managers at club level should not do is use those 3 weeks in the non-contact part just to run them. Like, that's a waste of your time. There's more creative ways to use the ball, twisting and turning, shadowing, you know, all as much that when you hit those last 11 days of the full contact, fellas are not getting a huge shock to the system. Do you know, I suppose that's the thing. And absolutely, then injury, you know, because that there'd be a big issue with injuries then, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. And you'd be trying to use that period where, you know, the ball, for me, if you were looking after that, would be in 90 or 95% of the session.
Yeah.
You get the session designed so it gets out of the lads what you want in terms of them getting their skills in, getting used to being around bodies while they have the distance still in place, and getting used to making decisions then on the ball, off the ball, and how that relates to your game plan and how you want to play, for sure. Yeah. I think exactly. If you're just turning up and running the guts out of lads for a couple of weeks there, it's a complete waste of time. Yeah,
complete waste of time. Come here, how's things in Arsenal? You're nearly ready to get them back on the field, so you're well ahead of the GA in terms of that.
It's you've been kind of day by day here now at the minute, just finding out as the Premier League has been making decisions and there's been meetings and you're waiting to hear what news is coming out of those. Yeah, but we're 10 days away now from the first game, and we actually have an extra game to play, which means we start a couple of days earlier. So similar to the club lads there now, we're going to have a little bit of a big spike up to start. I think we have three games maybe in the first week from the fixtures we've seen, or the first 7 or 8 days. So yeah, it's going to be a busy start, but yeah, looking forward to it.
But you know, in normal pre-seasons there's lots of, you know, challenge games and little tournaments and stuff. You don't have any of that now, can you play another club in a friendly before the Hudson?
We actually, the teams have been playing now, and I think I've seen a bit online there where teams have been using their stadiums and getting lads used to being in kit. And we played a friendly there at the weekend against Charlton Athletic, just kind of the same as you'd have a normal pre-season game with a Gaelic team or whatever it might be, just trying to get lads match time and build that up then now over the next kind of 2 weeks until we get going, you know.
Right, okay. Well, so best of luck with it anyways. And you might, any word on piping atmosphere into the stadiums or anything like that?
I've only seen the small bits that people have been commenting online, but I haven't heard anything concrete yet on what it might be. Our first game is up at Man City, so if there's a bit of Oasis going in the background, Wooly, I won't be complaining.
I don't think anybody will. Barry, come here. Thanks very much.
Okay, good man. Thank you.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we did. We actually sold them to. I think I had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey still there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
You see them on the beaches, never. And so you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, and a donkey in a palace.
All right, so the newspaper review, lads. We're going to start with Joe Brawley, our friend Joe Brawley in the Sunday Independent. So the headline here is, better to have gone too far than not far enough. And then the kind of subheadline is, the GAA did the right thing at the right time and is emerging from the pandemic stronger. So Brawley writing a pretty positive piece about the GAA, which is kind of unusual for him. He talks a lot about the UK. Like, it's a little bit of everything in this article, but there was one piece in it which kind of annoyed me a little bit. And he said, unlike the Premier League, which is a paragon of corporate insincerity, the GAA is very strong, is in a very strong position of trust. At the beginning of the COVID-19 outbreak, our leaders acted swiftly, decisively, correctly, and all around in a way that made us proud to be Gaels. Again, most people would agree with that if you're not kind of one of these conspiracy theorists who say the lockdown was, you know, a waste of time and everything. The GAA did act swiftly. They acted in March and closed everything down, and got no one would criticise that. Then he goes on to talk about Colm O'Rourke, and he says, Colm O'Rourke, for example, has bemoaned the fact that pitches were closed and remain closed. As always, his message is powerful and deserving of close attention. But for me, closing the pitches altogether made a powerful statement at a time when we had no idea how catastrophic this virus might be. Of less importance, it also meant our kids couldn't gather in large groups, and that the GAA wasn't being battered on social media with clips of rowdy gatherings and the like. Instead, we sucked it up for the common good and for our elderly, etc. So Colm O'Rourke never complained back in March. You see, this is completely incorrect. Colm O'Rourke complained on May the 17th. When we had 64 new cases, when the curve had completely been flattened. It's completely unfair to try and, insinuate that he had a problem with the closing of the pitches. Colm O'Rourke had a problem with the pitches remaining closed when the curve had been flattened and everything was okay. Like, May the 17th is nothing like March the 17th, Colin.
No, it's definitely not. Like, I think Brawley mentioned Peter Canavan in the piece talking about nationalists in the north take their call from the GA rather than Stormont or Westminster. And I spoke at the time, it was great what the GA done at the time in March, because everybody took their lead from them and they all closed down and socially distanced before the UK did. But yeah, this is Brawley using what the GA did well back in March for his argument now in May, June time. And like I said, time as well. Like, I could still, I wasn't that put out by the fact that the GA were being conservative, because I thought it was better to speed up the opening rather than having to pull it back. But yeah. What he's doing there, yeah, is just using a song good they did 3 months ago rather than actually talking about what they're doing right now.
Yeah, exactly. So the timeline here is obviously in March, like I said, everything was shut down and everybody agreed with that I could see. I don't remember anyone in the GA saying this was a bad idea. We were all scared shitless. We didn't know what was coming down the tracks. Leo Varadkar was saying we could have 250,000 cases, all sorts of stuff, like the state of the nations. This was the right thing to do, absolutely, by the GA. Then on May the 1st, the government announced their guidelines of, returning the life back to normal. And then May the 6th, the GEA announced that they were continuing to close pitches until July the 20th, 11 weeks further. That's when, I started losing the head on the show here. Because on May the 7th, there was 22 new cases outside residential homes. So sometimes the way the GEA are playing this is that they're saying when they made the July the 20th call, it was a much different landscape. It wasn't that different. It was relatively few cases in the community at that time. They made a crazy decision based on from county board chairman with no medical advice, and that is the big problem here. On May the 13th, Liam Sheedy criticised it. Like, that was only a week later. And then May the 17th, Colm O'Rourke wrote his first piece in The Independent. May the 17th, there was 64 new cases. On May the 21st, there was 51 new cases. So we're not talking about a month ago being like March the 17th. We're talking a month ago, the government opening back up the country, opening up the country. So it kind of annoys me that I'm surprised Brawley wrote that and kind of, I don't know, insinuated that for some reason O'Rourke was against the lockdown almost in general. And I don't like the fact that the GEA keep saying things like a month ago it was much different, Connor. It wasn't that much different a month ago.
Yeah, and just on I think I've been paying fairly close attention to what Joe Brawley's been writing, in the time since, and this seems to be the first time where he's taken a big stance on this, at least anyway. Whereas Colm O'Rourke has been consistent on this since, regardless of whether you agreed with him or not, he's been making this case since early May, as you said, and obviously the evidence is supporting him more and more by the week. So it's a bit rich of Joe then to just mention, without kind of being specific about what Colm O'Rourke has been saying the whole time, just to suggest that he's going off what the GAA were saying earlier in March. So, it's unfair on Colm O'Rourke, as you said. And there was just a couple other things in Joe Brawley's piece as well. Like, he said that the GAA are coming out of it looking pristine. I wouldn't necessarily say that's exactly the case. Obviously, Colm O'Rourke has been raising issues, as have you, Woolley. And then there was a throwaway line about it's less important that kids couldn't gather in small groups. And I just if you look on Friday when the news was announced that kids were allowed back to summer camps, and the relief that came from parents all around the country because of they knew the impact that it was going to have on their physical and mental health. I thought that was just a bit of a throwaway line as well. So, kind of unfair on Colm O'Rourke. And I suppose the irony is, I think they were on the same page in the paper, and Joe Brawley's assumed far more space than Colm O'Rourke did. So
I don't want to talk too much about Colm O'Rourke. I agree with all of it. But it's very like stuff we were talking about last Thursday. So I don't think there's too much. He has some interesting stats. He said 16 people under 14 or under 45 have died. And he made the point that in that period of over 3 months, in a normal year, far more people under 45 age group would have died than have died from, the coronavirus. When you look at the stats, 93% of those who died who have been over 65, 89% of those have been underlying conditions. The stats aren't really pointing at this being a huge threat to people that would be playing GAA, you know? So, like, I mean, he's being very consistent about this. He also makes the point that he says Donegal, Kerry, Sligo, Limerick and Wexford have had no new cases since the week ending May the 29th. Kerry, Sligo and Donegal have had almost no cases for 3 weeks now, yet pitches remain closed. Why could the GAA not have opened immediately for business in those counties? Why take an approach of all or nothing? Why have those counties to wait while other sports can get back 3 weeks earlier? Again, all making sense as far as I'm concerned, and stuff we said last Thursday. And, you know, we know John Horan says we're all in this together, Colin, because obviously Dublin is not a county that could open up much faster.
Yeah, you used a trigger word for me there, though, as people of underlying conditions. I actually hate when everyone just assumes that that's fine. Like, you know, people of underlying conditions died. It's like, well, no, it's not. Like, you know, we can still protect them. And I get that we're easing things up anyway. But I do think that if you go back a month,
Just on that though, Conan, I don't think it's like people are saying that's their fair game. I think it's to more relax people that don't have them. Obviously, the people with underlying conditions need to be very careful and need to cocoon. You know, I think that's more, you know, to make people who don't have underlying conditions more relaxed rather than going, well, we can sacrifice the people with underlying conditions.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know, just like we know a lot of people who have underlying conditions as well, but they don't know about them.
I've asthma. I'm in one of the more higher risk groups.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you're a good authority to talk about it then.
Don't just throw me to the wolves.
I think if you go back though, like the CPA did a survey 3 weeks ago and 43% of the people said they wouldn't play without a vaccine. But I think if you took that survey today, that would be a lot less. Like, you know, people would say they would play without a vaccine. Do you know what? So I think things have moved fast even over the month. And I get like yourself and Colin O'Rourke were out in front. But me back then, I was sort of like, there's no big rush. And I think a month ago, the way we were seeing like videos from people on the beaches and they were congregating, I think if you had saw them in GAA pitches, like probably should have made this point rather than talking about it back in March. If you had a clip going viral in May at the GAA pitches, and the GAA would have been taking a bit of a hammer, and then they wouldn't know, but they would have probably 3-4 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. So in the Sunday Times, we have Dennis Walsh, who talks to Niamh Fitzpatrick, not someone I would have been aware of. The headline here is players tell you things that they won't ever tell the manager. So she is a sports psychologist. The sub headline is Niamh Fitzpatrick, the sports psychologist on life in a male domain and her own grief. So there's a little bit about, obviously, like Dennis says, her own grief here. But I thought, like, this was funny in a way because she was a sports psychologist with Wexford in 1996. And this was a big undercover operation. Like, nobody was allowed to know that they had a sports psychologist. She was the first person to work with a hurling team. So for matches in Croke Park that summer, Fitzpatrick was identified to the relevant authorities as a physiotherapist. They didn't want anyone to know that they had a sports psychologist with them. On one night when the media were invited to Wexford training session, Griffin suddenly remembered her undercover alias. "Come here," he said to me, "run out onto that pitch and run your hands up and down Larry Murphy's leg." I'm not sure you could say that in this current climate. Like, I mean, that might be a little bit, imagine telling someone now to go and do that. But anyways, I'm not going to get into a conversation like that. Interestingly, Conan, in 1993, Derry were the first team to win in All-Ireland with a sports psychologist on board, but no hurling team had done it. So even in Martin Story's speech, when they won the All-Ireland, he referred to Fitzpatrick as their special friend, and they just did not want to admit they had a sports psychologist. It's hilarious stuff.
And like, they won the All-Ireland as well, so what more vindication do you need that this
worked.
But he still didn't feel comfortable about saying, what do they say, he called her a special friend on the podium, so he didn't do it. But yeah, Derry had Craig Mahoney, he was, I think, from Australia, he was in with them, and like, you know, by all accounts, some of the stories the boys tell you, like, you know, he's a bit out there with some of his methods. Like, there was something Emin Burns telling me before where they were told to imagine they were red foxes and the opposition were little white chickens. They were doing this stuff, but he did have a good thing where it was like, just like, if you made a mistake, you had to just shout a word or a phrase or do some motion with your hand, you know, just as a way of throwing that mistake out of your system, sort of thing. So even back in 93, that was working well.
Yeah, she was with she was with Mayo as well, Connor. So, like, they kept her a secret as well, because I'd never heard. Caroline Curridge, you hear all over the place. You don't hear of Niamh Fitzpatrick too much, and they do the same job, it looks like.
No, I hadn't heard about her at all until yesterday. I found the Mayo piece of the story fascinating as well. Obviously, she was a sister of Dara Fitzpatrick, who sadly passed away in the tragedy in the West Coast as well. And that she said that she confronted that immediately with the Mayo team, and that she managed to deal with it very well throughout the year. I think this is the summer of 2017 when Mayo got to the final against Dublin. And then it was just after they beat Kerry in the replay, it just suddenly came on her, you know, and she got a little bit emotional, and all the players kind of came up to her just in the warm up area in Croke Park, just gave her a hug and kind of helped her through it and stuff. So, and just it was fascinating as well that she said she doesn't really have regrets, but if she could point to one, it would be that she couldn't help that Mayo team to an All Ireland. So that obviously got me a bit emotional as well. But just the fact that like this story, the fact that this story went hidden for so long. I mean, Wexford is what, 96, and even like, you know, you'd think as close as 2017 you'd be more aware of this sort of stuff, but that certainly escaped my radar, and I'd say it escaped the radar of most people in Mayo as well. So just really fascinating story, and if people haven't got a chance to read it, I'd suggest that they do.
Yeah, maybe she's an undercover sports psychologist and she's just blowing her cover now. Like, I mean, this, she works in the shadows and you're not supposed to know that she's there. That's the kind of power of Niamh. No, but that's a good piece. If you get a chance to read it, it'll probably be coming online. The Irish Mail on Sunday, again, very strong on GAA, four or five different pieces. Shane McGrath writes a piece. He's the chief sports writer, and he writes a piece on the return to play. And again, he's very complimentary towards the GAA, like he was the last time. He said that the GAA on Friday night, or the release their guidelines for its safe return, were impressively detailed. And then he said, here, this is a bit that really got me going. Opening everything now is the cry. A month ago, the idea that club matches would be played by the end of July and All-Ireland series would be underway in the third week of October sounded fanciful. It didn't. That's a month ago. Again, you see, Shane is trying to play that game that Brawley's playing, in that making people think that last month was March. Last month, the day, I keep repeating this because I tweeted it, last month when the GAA announced an 11-week ban on opening up the pitches, there was 22 cases in the community, nationwide in the Republic. Don't try to pretend that a month ago this was fanciful. It wasn't fanciful. It absolutely wasn't fanciful. So don't say that it was fanciful. Michael Clifford did a piece about the new club in Belfast with Dave McCreevy. I'm not going to get into that one too much. He also talks to Pete McGrath, Michael Clifford. And remember, we're kind of tired of managers and GAA players being asked their opinion on the coronavirus and stuff like this. And here's a perfect example of why you shouldn't be asking them too much about it. So Pete McGrath says, you're going to have to be looking at playing matches behind closed doors. You have to have referees, linesmen tested, managers, selectors, backroom teams. And in the Premiership, they're actually disinfecting the fields they're playing on and the dressing rooms. I'm not so sure we're in a position to do that. At the end of it, we won't be left with matches, or we'll be left with matches behind closed doors, playing matches in empty stadiums. It's just beyond me at the minute to see a way through it. And amazingly, Shane McGrath has a smaller piece on this exact page where they interviewed Tom Ryan. And this was probably at the media launch of the return to play. And he says, it would be our hope to have attendances at games. It's something we're conscious of, and we see it as desirable to have crowds at our games. So he's just completely contradicting what Pete McGrath, just a notion he has in his head. And he hasn't really been following it. And they're almost one column over from each other. They're right beside each other. Pete McGrath's quotes, incorrect quotes, being completely disproved by Tom Ryan, the Director General. And they're on the same page.
Pete McGrath just took a stab at it anyway. Like, they should have learned from Jurgen Klopp back in February when he was like, why the hell are you asking me about this? When he just batted it down completely.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's probably the best thing that they should do. I just thought that was funny when they were beside each other. But Shane McGrath also has a good piece with Barry Waters. He's head of sports science with StatSports. And we spoke about them last Thursday, and we had a bit of a confusion based off the stats that were in the Irish Times and in the Irish Independent. Remember, we were saying, what's that 2.5? I thought that was more than one player because it just didn't seem right. And we were kind of confused as to what it was. But the numbers weren't exactly completely accurate. To be more accurate, And Shane has them right here. He says, the company published a paper on Wednesday night which found the length of the average incursion, their term for when a player gets closer than 2 metres to another player, across four game study was 2.5 seconds. And each player was exposed to an average of 539 of such incursions per game. So, like, I mean, a lot of people were losing their minds about these stats last Thursday. I think Mark McHugh especially was given out about him. He was tweeting, you know, about the what did he say? I'm sorry, but I'm not buying this. Ask man markers or players who've been man marked. They'd be lucky to have 2.5 seconds without the man holding onto his jersey. And that was the confusion we had. But it was misreported in that 2.5 seconds is the average incursion, of which there are 539 incursions. And now, Conan, that makes so much more sense.
It does, yeah. It was probably grim, though, that I was thinking that sounds about right. I've never touched somebody for that long.
Did you say that was right?
No. But I was thinking, do you know what? I can make peace with it. I'm not getting close enough to people. That's going to be the most common joke, though, when this comes back. It's like, oh, you must still think the social distance policies are still in place, yeah. When someone's getting roasted.
Yeah, but it's interesting what Barry Solon says there about, you know, the 3 weeks before the 11 days contact, and not the hand passing games because they're too close contact, but when you widen them out, and we've probably all been involved in training sessions where they've been widened out. And let's be honest, the marking when it's widened out is very, very slack. You just can't recreate that same intensity as the small area. So those type of games where you're twisting, turning, running to the side, almost shadowing that you're marking a fella, but you're away. Pretty much what I do when I'm playing those games anyways, because all I do is pretend I'm kind of staying close to him. But, you know, you're not exactly getting your hands anywhere near him. But they're probably versions of that. And being creative about those 3 weeks are probably the way a manager should be going, Conan.
Pretty much what Conan does in a real game, by the sounds of things, there was.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much what I would say an awful lot of club players do. Those games will suit them down to the ground. But I think that's probably important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And those games sound doable as well. I think the thing last week when people were examining the guidelines and wondering what sort of training they could be doing, and we're probably fearing, I think, that Barry Solon put the kibosh on was a load of drills where you're just running in a straight line all the time because, you know, they might avoid contact, whatever. Whereas a game like that, you know, you can allow a certain amount of distancing, but also replicate, you know, game-based stuff to a certain degree. That sounds a lot more palatable to me than what I feared when I, you know, thought about training, return to training with social distancing involved.
Yeah, okay, so we'll finish with the Sunday World. Pat Spillane, one of our favourite columnists to review. The hilarious thing about this is Pat Spillane wrote this last Monday before any of this. He didn't have an iota that this return to play was going to be released, let's say, at the end of the week, because he picked his league all-stars. Like, I mean, like, honestly, we've just got some news. All that nonsense that you're trying to make up columns and shows, you don't need that now. We have proper news that we can actually talk about. And he only has a little sidebar on the back to play roadmap that the GAA released on Friday. And he picks his league all-stars, Conan. It's a classic. It really is a classic. He obviously did it early in the week without any kind of clue that this was coming down the tracks.
Like, it must have been some effort, because I was thinking, Jesus, I can't remember any of the league at this stage. Like, and then in fairness, then, like, I can't call him out on any of it because I don't remember any of the league, but every player he picked, I remembered a game at least that they played well in. So I was like, all right, he must have it right.
Yeah, but that's not research. That's basically picking a man at a match in the televised game you know what I mean? Every player he has on it was on one of the televised TG cards, because I remember them playing well. Like, when you look at the team he picked, it's the most obvious. Do you get me? It was pretty much like Niall Morgan had a very high profile good game, you know. Ryan Wiley the same against Dublin, Oisín Mullen the same, yeah, Brian Fenton, Ronan Steed is a no brainer, Michael Murphy, Shane Walsh, Darren McCurry, David Clifford. Like, I mean, this is just basically, you know, the best player on a certain team in the televised game.
Yeah, he had the worst thing of all time to say for Gavin White. So this is he's picking his all-stars for 2020 essentially, and he's like, thankfully Kerry have put him back to his best position at halfback with pace. Like, <what? laughs> this is the reason you put him in your all-star team. But he also thought that David Clifford is proving people wrong in his second season, and it's like, Pat, he's already won two All-Stars. This is his third season, and now he's Kerry captain. So he's satisfied anyway that the Kerry captain isn't suffering from second season syndrome.
Jesus Christ. Well, anyways, I think the day of picking those teams and trying to make up shows, because I think we're going to start getting news filtered in a bit over the next few weeks leading up to the club season and, you know, the inter-county season. We don't have that roadmap of, you know, what dates and how what kind of form that's going to take. So you'd just be more enthusiastic in that we have news. We have GA news. Things are going on. We're getting some momentum going here, you know. Like, I mean, that's the one kind of good thing about this whole thing. It feels like we're back, you know, that kind of way. But, yeah, we've run out of time, lads, because we're not going to spend too much time talking about Pat Spillane's, Pat Spillane's piece, and we've run out of time to talk about any of the others. So we'll leave it there, and we will be back on Thursday with another show. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.